This is the thing that creates war, allows for murder, allows for the possibility of rape, even potentially an up to genocide. This thing keeps you from people who could potentially change your life. It could be the partner of your dreams. It might be your new best friend, but the problem is, they are just not in your group. So, they might as well be damn dead to you. Today's podcast is the effects of in-groups and out-groups. Now, I do want to put a trigger warning on here right away, and objectively, I do use a few stereotype words once, and I do this to look at the effects of these words in an academic or in a scientific sense. Once they are stated and made clear, I use them as the blank word, as is normally or traditionally done. So welcome back to the podcast. I was able to podcast last week, and I felt like that one went well, but it was a little bit more raw, probably a little bit more visceral, which means Sarah's going to have a harder time with that one, sadly. But it was nice just to be able to get out there and kind of express emotions. That was the autonomous vehicles podcast, or how do you pull over a self-driving car. So it's going to be interesting. I'll like to see how that one's going to be received. So the podcast experienced an all-time high yesterday, 105 downloads in a day. Wow. That really made me very, very excited. Still, I would like to see that on a day-to-day download, but again, this is a small and fragile thing, and it's going to take a bit of time, and that grind process is very, very good for me and my ego. And as it stands right now, I am really looking at taking some time to put out a series of one-take topic podcasts in the next little bit, because I want to see how the downloads go for those topics specifically. And so far, we are looking to get into those one-hit, one-topic, deep-dive things for the next few weeks. But now, we are 6 months into the Inclusive Active podcast project, and I'm wondering, how's it going? What do you like? What do you not like? Please remember that you can email me at inclusiveactivism@cox.net, or you can leave me a voicemail, which I can throw into the podcast and respond to, at 860-576-9393, and I would love to hear your thoughts. Also, please remember to rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or your pod server of choice. Please share the podcast on social media. All these things go a long, long way to make a significant difference for us here at the Inclusive Activism Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, as these are great ways for me to show proof of work to potential sponsors. It would also go a long way in helping get me and my producer, Sarah, paid for her time and work, too. So far, it takes me roughly 2 to 3 hours to get these out. So I spend about 2 to 3 hours on each podcast, especially the one takes. The interviews are a little bit quicker and go a little bit easier, but the one take deep dives do take a lot of time because I do write that out. So I have a sense of what's going on and how to speak that well and clearly to you. And then I have to record them, and that takes the time that it takes too. So I do put a lot of time into this. And so any help that you can give me in helping to support the podcast is going to make a huge difference. Also, needing to take a little bit of time to check in on my activism, I went to a new leadership opportunity called Valley Leadership Advance. It is for people who do leadership in Arizona but are not yet considered pillars of the community. Sadly, I am not a pillar of the community at this point. But I got to go there. I got to meet about 50 different professionals across the valley, and that was really great. I was sadly unable to be at the protest on Tuesday when President Trump was downtown here in Phoenix, but we did take some time to take some Gatorade and granola bars down to those in attendance, which is a form of activism if you can't physically be there. We weren't able to physically be there because of the fact that we both had work at that time, so it was not a possibility for us. And I, unfortunately, I was really bummed about. I missed the Unity rally. for solidarity after Charlottesville. We had a birthday party scheduled for my partner's father. And while that was a great and wonderful time, it was really, really hard to miss that specific thing. So self-care, up to this point, I have done 5 times a week of lifting, and that has been done really good. I also, 2 weeks ago, got 3 times cardio done, so that was good. And then the week before that, I had meditated for 4 times for at least 10 to 15 minutes as well, and so that was really good. And then the last little piece of self-care that I got to, which really is pleasing for me, is we decorated the house for Halloween. We have a little thing called Halloween Town that we put together here, and it's really Lee Max's Spooky Town, but we had some different elements in there. But me and my partner had been really stressed recently and have been going through some stuff, and so we tried to take a second to spice the house up a little bit. So with that being said, let's move on to the podcast for today. In-groups and out-groups and how they do the damage they do, and how we buy into them, and what we could do then potentially to widen those out-group connections. First, what are in-groups, and why do we defer to them so strongly? Well, honestly, it starts in the womb. Scientists have noted that we have a strong preference for people who have the same accent as we do. Yes, we start to identify with our clan, our group, and our family as early as fetus in the womb. And there is some evidence that we are very, very hardwired to only identify with up to 50 to 150 people. See, we are wired to defer to a tribal type connection specifically. And this becomes a problem because we live in a very big and global world slash society, but we're wired for cooperation, but we're also wired to look for and to distance ourselves from an other. And you, my friend, you do this too. Think and reflect, how big is your social circle? Now, please, please don't get too, I have a black friend with me, and I don't want you to get too, I have a black friend on me. But unless you have a really, really diverse friend group with a really, really diverse background, you too potentially fall into this in-group problem. We actually have the same problem come up at any town, and frankly, in-groups and out-groups can be a huge problem among the any town staff. This program is about diversity, inclusion, and equity, but still, yeah, still, we tend to even in-group with one another as a staff, even though we know the dangers of people feeling out-grouped. Still, we and I still tend to in-group with people that we know and feel a little bit more comfortable around. So we can tend to default to the people that we know a little bit better, and we tend to default to the people that we've already established a rapport with. And there were several times in the counselor group that we needed to discuss this problem again and again and again. And I have to be honest, even me, I felt a little bit more comfortable with a certain group in the counselor group. I kind of in-grouped a little bit there with people that I had met last year. And even I had felt the effects of in-groups, out-groups the year before that because I was more of an out-grouped person. You know, it's something we got to look at. It's something we have to own and examine. You know, I have my in-groups at Paradise Valley. I've got my in-groups in the activism community. You know, there's those people I kind of just default to. This is all despite the fact that in my mind, I logically know that in-groups create out-groups, which creates the problems that can lead up to and including genocide. So you would think as a Native person, I would really try to own the fact that this is a really, really bad thing, and I wouldn't want to be associated with something like that, considering genocide has probably hit my community one of the hardest. And while we are on the subject of in and out-groups, I think I found the reason why. I personally will always tend to eschew and not use certain slur-based stereotypes, and always teach those with whom I interact with to avoid stereotypes used by certain groups. So some of these stereotypes are, again, trigger warning here. If you are highly adverse to hearing harsh stereotypes, this is the time I need to say the words. So certain groups, in groups, will use words like this with one another, right? So they'll use faggot, nigga, cunt, bitch. That will be used with in groups specifically. Now the F word, the N word, the C word, the B word are at times used and seen as allowable within certain communities with similar social identities. Now, when these come up, I have and I will continue to advise these groups to not perpetuate or to try to reclaim that stereotype because of this reason. Only the people in the group can use the stereotype with one another. People outside of that group are not allowed to use that stereotype because it still others them. And because of this phenomena, this creates a favored in-group type of talking, and it also creates an out-group type of way of relating to people. And the fact that it reinforces an in-group and reinforces that this other person is an out-group person creates that dissension, that anti-inclusion type thing. And so I'm not a fan of that type of thing. So in-group favoring creates separation. And when you have a space where I can say this, or you can say this, but you can't, or you even allow someone to kind of be down and say the thing that you really don't want other people to say, it can push boundaries of what is acceptable. Now, I recall a student whose personal choice was to use in-group stereotypes and allowed an out-group friend, someone that was not of that social identity, so it was a black guy, the black guy couldn't say what the white guy was saying. It created a sense, a weird problem, right? It made it a little bit awkward because they let this out-group white person use the in-group N-word, right? And so that person was saying the N-word in their presence, but it's almost like they kept saying it and kept saying it and kept saying it. And the fact that they just kept saying it all the time, the guy's like, dude, that's a lot of N-words, man. Like, relax with the N-word a little bit. The N-word's getting like really weird at this point. It was amazing how quickly at how the in-group got annoyed with this person using the word over and over again. Now, I have nothing wrong with groups of similar people getting together, spending time together in order to find beauty and their sense of togetherness. That, I think, is really important. There's nothing wrong with, like, black people or women getting together and talking and trying to understand what's happening with their experience. But I also feel like they should kind of get together and get around other people again and try to help them understand what that experience feels like, what they came up with when they spent that time in an in-group space, sharing that with others with an out-group experience. But when it creates a sense of out-group, I get a little bit concerned. And this is because of the fact that in-group only talk creates out-groups. And that means to me that there is a barrier of inclusion in this space. So other ways we tend to make in-groups is we tell inside jokes, or we only call in certain people in a small way of telling other folks that we're not favored. So we might be like, hey, Billy, come here, but leave the rest of the group over there. And if you're honest about that, even now, like, reflect on someone that you know, like, you knowingly choose to out-group and you just leave out for no really good reason. They want to be with you. They want to be friends with you. They try to be down, but you just keep leaving them out. And this is part of an out-group situation you are creating due to the barrier that you are making with them joining your own in-group. So the second topic we're going to cover right now is out-groups. Now, here is what we do know. That your mind is already consciously aware that you know some people that you tend to out-group, right? These are like jocks, nerds, activists, fashionistas. Whatever you know about that group, or whatever association you make with that group, you just don't like them, or you just generally don't identify with that group. But the sense of disconnection is casual. It's not antithetical, right? Like, you're not like, I don't like them at all. It's just like, I wouldn't call myself a fashionista in any way, shape, or form. If you've ever met me, you'd never mistake me for a fashionista. Not even in the slightest bit. But this sense that disconnection is casual, it might not be connections or opportunities in which that lack of connection seems to be a big deal for you because of the fact that you don't feel particularly connected with that group. If both parties are relatively ambivalent, then there's not really any hard feelings created in this space. And for the most part, I will concede that it's really not that big of a deal, but I do get concerned about the potential of missed opportunities. For more on this topic, I would definitely recommend you check out the podcast on relational versus interactional thinking. And given the general sense of apathy on both sides, I think the fact that these two groups of people are going to fall into interactional thinking, I think, is the biggest downfall here. They won't come to understand what are the good things about the ways they do things differently. You know, objectively understanding things, if I hung out with a few more fashionistas, I'd probably just a little bit snazzier or snappier, and I can use that a little bit, right? I am very minimalist in the ways that I choose to dress, and I do need to impress people a little bit more and more, so maybe I could make some more fashionista type friends so I could look a little bit more snazzier. Now, the next level of disconnection is the ones with people that you see as anathema. That is something or someone that is just to be detested or is just outright shunned. These things you identify as almost anti-you. So for me, it might be a neo-Nazi, a white supremacist, or a self-identified misogynist. What is interesting about the people whose other group identification is so far from your own means that you will not allow yourself to see them as human. To identify the humanity in this group of those people means that you have to validate them as a person specifically, and that can be a very threat to your very existence. Think about that. Their existence is a threat to your existence. You know, wow, that is a lot of power to give to someone you don't really like. Now, I'm not saying you should be like that group. Trust me, the Inclusive Activism Podcast is not looking to make it easier for you to identify with neo-Nazis, but I am saying that you should look into understanding your human connections with, say, Bill or Jill, who does happen to be a neo-Nazi. Now, again, I understand that when you first understand this, it might be a little bit weird, but when you won't validate the humanity of a person that's very different than you, there's no opportunity to connect with them. And because you hate that identity, you don't want to recognize their humanity. And choosing to reject the humanity of this person that's different than you, you are denying the ability to connect with that person's humanness, which means that there's no opportunity to connect or understand or relate or change one another. And I'm sure at this point you're like saying, why, Rowdy? Give me one good reason why I should try to find the humanity in someone who degrades my own humanity or the humanity of others that I care about. And it's this reason. As your own sense of identity rises, other people's identity become a threat to your own. So when you see someone who's different than you, you almost want to bash that identity in order to save your own identity. Now, that doesn't happen with people that you have like a casual disconnection with, but it does happen with people that are vastly, vastly different than you. Like, you want to bash the identity of the person that is so, so different than you because they're a threat to who you are. They're a threat to what you stand for. They are nothing like you. And that is where the problem happens. It's because you're not seeing this person as having a learned behavior. You're not seeing someone talk this behavior to someone else. And in not understanding the humanity of that experience, and not understanding the fact that someone learned racism, or that someone learned misogyny, or that someone was taught how to be patriarchal, you are not becoming this viral antidote to this hate phenomenon, right? Because hate and love is taught. It's spread from person to person. And it happens from person to person, but hate tends to spread a little bit better online than love does, right? Hate online is easy. And when I ask you to think to and identify online hate or think about a space online that caused you to hate, you can probably come up with something really quick. Any message board conversation that you got into, any comments thread that you got into, or many different Facebook arguments with family, I'm sure you saw it devolve into hate really quickly. You can identify that devolving into hate online fast. But like, what conversation devolved into love? And how often did you see that happen? When you choose to leave someone in an out-group, they never get the chance to break that hate code. And the only hate code breaker that exists is love. And also, this is about you, right? You listen to the Inclusive Activism Podcast so you can be a better leader personally, correct? Well, hotshot, this is your opportunity. You can choose to have an effect with patience, with love, and with the opportunity of human connection. Now, I would also warn too, this needs to be done situationally. You can't potentially approach a group of skinheads at a protest and attempt to love them. You might get killed in that instance. We can only really choose to use this attempt in very specific situations and under very specific circumstances. This is not something that's easy to do. It only can be done with people that you have some type of loose relationship with, but it is the only way that thing is going to be undone. You have to matter to someone before you can change their mind. Because who the hell are you anyway? And why should they listen to you when you don't really matter? You're just the other face yelling at them. You're not going to change someone's heart and mind by yelling at them. You can show them that opposition exists, and that's good, but it doesn't change hearts and minds either. And you need to think and understand the way people think and understand in order to undo the way they think and understand. And we have, this is the last part, we have to break the pattern. This pattern keeps repeating, and this pattern comes from us. This isn't our fault issue. We just get lazy and pick in and choose to out groups. So we over and over pick in groups and we over and over disfavor out groups. We have to make the choice to create situations and opportunities to meet people in out group situations. Think about you and how you choose to respond to dissent on social media. Do you tend to talk and respond or react with rational conversation that makes you really hard to dismiss? Or do you proactively take control of the conversation? Do you respond? Do you just viscerally be like, get out of here and get off my page? Like, how do you react? How do you do things? Do you take it as an opportunity to teach? Or do you just respond in a visceral way as though they invaded your territory a bit? You need to have that conversation. You need to talk about your motivations, your concerns. You need to understand their motivations, their concerns, and you also have to make appeals to the humanities and people. And I hate to say it, but, you know, neo-Nazis are still people. And they learned how to be that way. And they think their way's right. Nazis thought they were doing the right thing back in the day. They thought they were on the good guys' team. It's not until you choose to stop, until you choose to love them, is until you can get them to think differently about what happens. To think differently about what they're doing and how that affects people. To get them to understand what that lack of love, that hate code is gonna do. And where will it end up, you know? You have to think in different ways. You know, I might make an empathetic appeal when I might need to make logical appeals, right? So, for example, at the Charlottesville rally, they were talking about blood and soil. And this goes back to the Nazi days when they talk about blood and soil. Like, the blood and the soil is mixed with the people who were originally there. If I wanted to lose a logical argument, I'd be like, look, man, the blood in the soil is not like white people blood in American soil. It's native people's blood that are in that soil. Like, come on, man, you're just not thinking right. That might be a way to break the code. I'd also probably need to make an attempt to connect with their sense of Americanness in order to help them think and do things differently. And the only way we're going to be able to get good at helping people think differently is that we're going to need to do this over and over and over and again. You need loving kindness and human connection reps in order to get people to think differently. You need to step up to the plate and try to find ways to diffuse things, to be a pragmatic person, to be someone that's hard to dismiss, to be someone that chooses to love instead of hate. And you will need more chances to do this with many different types of people. You will need to practice your connection skill with middle-aged dads, with black nationalists, with segregationists, with Catholic nuns or Buddhist monks, many, many, many different people. The more you get out there, the more you connect with people that are different than you, and you understand them in different ways, the better and better you're gonna get. And you can choose to be a person of infinite human connection with other people if you want to. And if you wanna get better and better and better and better, practice listening. Practice really hearing the wants and needs in another person. There's not a need to build a wall. Building a wall is not about a human need. It might be for a need for a sense of safety, or it might be a need to connect to a sense of community, right? There is no community right now. I notice here, my neighbors really don't go outside very much. I don't know them so very much. There's not a big sense of community here. Maybe I need to create community so they're not so scared, so they don't feel like they need to build a wall. Maybe there's a concern not having, you know, people say the need is people are taking our jobs. Well, they might have a need for economic security, or a need to understand that no one's taking that job anyway. Maybe that job is going away. You know, certain jobs just won't exist anymore. Like I mentioned in the last podcast, over-the-road trucking is going to go away. And it's not because there's brown people taking your jobs. It's because rich people aren't going to make robotic self-driving cars. So if you want to get mad at anybody, get mad at the people making the robotic cars. But at the same point in time, you should also understand that change is coming. And there's people out here that can help you with that change. You know, maybe you get into something where you help the trucks understand how better to navigate the roads, or when to drive, or when the traffic is. You can help coders make a difference, and I bet you that job would pay a lot better, and you can also stay closer to home. See, thinking differently, finding ways to connect with people differently. That's what we gotta do. We gotta find a way to make this thing happen. This method of communication is referred to as nonviolent communication. And if you're interested in having me explore this method of nonviolent communication a little bit more, please let me know, because I know a lot about this and I would love to share that. So if that's of interest, please let me know. You can email me at inclusiveactivism@cox.net, or you could give me a call at 860-576-9393. So in review, the major points of this podcast were that you, yep, even special, sweet-hearted little old you, constantly and consistently defer to in-groups. And either you do it on purpose, or you just unintentionally leave people out. The second point was out-groups can be seen as at least an interaction with someone you're trying to be done with, someone you're not trying to talk with for a long period of time, or at worst, these folks can represent a threat to your own very sense of personhood, and you won't want to ever talk with them or try to relate in any way, shape, or form, thus creating a permanent barrier of separation. And third, we need to personally practice creating bigger and wider in-groups. The more and more we practice human connection, the more and more others will learn to undo the hate code which has been indoctrinated within them. And so with that, that is my time. So if this made you think of something, if you have a question, if you have a critique, I know this one is full of potential critiques, and so I'd like to have the chance to talk through those critiques with you. So don't be afraid to like call me out. It's the conversation that's gonna make us grow. You can call me at 860-576-9393. If for some reason that voicemail line's not working, email me and let me know. I think it is. When I call it, it works fine, but nobody seems to be leaving a message, so I could use that help. So that is a place for you to talk back, ask questions, hit with me at different scenarios, or how I might react to different situations in real time. And depending on how deep the topic is, I might give it just a little first take response, or it could be a new future podcast topic in the future. And as always, if you are interested in booking me or bringing the power of inclusive activism to your organization, you can always do so at inclusiveactivism@cox.net. That's inclusiveactivism@cox.net. And you can learn more about me and this organization at www.inclusiveactivism.com. Thank you for your time, and I can't wait to see you on the next side of the next podcast. Y'all have a great day.